Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
It is Friday, so that means it must be our weekly visit with Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. Dr. Stern, good morning. Good to have you on the show again this morning.
Good morning, Ted. TGIF to you.
It is exactly that. We are about next week, on Wednesday, we'll go to phase three. And overall, the numbers locally and the numbers statewide, we're doing well.
Yes, the state is on a downward trend. That is a reduction in spread of disease. And our hospitals are obviously not being overwhelmed or even near being overwhelmed right now. So I think it's reasonable that we move forward with phase three. And I'm sure people are looking forward to that. The governor did issue a guidance paper, a 40-page document, with specific instructions. So I encourage folks to take a look at that. But, you know, if you understand how this disease is transmitted, then you can use what I've been talking about is reasonable practicality in protecting yourself and protecting others. And hang in there for the next 6 months because we will have a vaccine.
But, and that's good news for you to say that and to look at that, especially when you and I first started talking in middle of March, and there were so many unknowns at that point, and whether even by then there would be, a year later there would be a vaccine. Just the thought that, you know, maybe six more months, and we all can do that.
Sure. And this is pretty good evidence that's a reality. Dr. Fauci, who's on the federal COVID-19 task force, has been commenting on this recently and is pretty confident that the vaccine will be available towards the end of this year or early next calendar year. You know, they're doing human testing in China already, and I think also in Canada. So I do expect that we will have a major vaccine campaign end of this calendar year. We don't know how that's going to be rolled out, the degree to which the private sector will be involved, but I think the vaccine needs to be made available to the private sector, because there's no way that we as a public sector, public health department, even though the Virginia Department of Health has a presence in every political jurisdiction in the Commonwealth, there's no way we would be able to deliver the vaccine how many people you think are going to need to be vaccinated into this year? 200,000 just in our area, Ted?
Yeah.
I've done some major vaccine campaigns. I thought it was a pretty big deal in H1N1 that in Richmond, we as a health department delivered 23,000 vaccines during the H1N1 flu vaccine campaign. This is going to be, you know, much, much more than that. Maybe 10 times more vaccine is going to be necessary to be delivered in this campaign. So once we get through that and everybody's provided, their internal defense system and is stimulated by the vaccine, is able then to recognize the natural virus when it invades, they would not suffer then disease because the immune system would respond, and we get on with life, you know?
Boy, doesn't that sound good? Doesn't that sound good? No, I can remember going to Stafford Airport and you stayed in your car and you got a shot in the arm, and it'll be interesting to see how it is rolled out, and this will be a major thing when we do have a vaccine.
Right. So we're already starting some conversation in-house about the vaccine campaign, planning on using the flu vaccine campaign this year as a way to exercise our staff's competence and confidence in delivering a large number of vaccines very quickly through flu vaccine exercises in the area. And then once the COVID vaccine is available after that, then we'll be rolling. But I expect that, you know, all of our local pharmacies would have this vaccine. I don't know that, but I expect that that's going to be one of the strategies. All the medical providers will have the vaccine. So hopefully it will be widely available, and we'll vaccinate our community and protect our community with use of the vaccine.
Just talking about that, it reminds me of the morning when you thought said that there, you know, that there was hope on the horizon, and that was during some very dark times. Just to be able to sit here and talk a little bit about a vaccine, you know, maybe by the end of the year, just the thought of that, and just the thought that, you know, we can make it, we can keep doing what we're doing, you know, as long as we need to get through this. And that's the other thing you have continually, as we have talked throughout all of these weeks, talked about, that we can make it through this.
Sure, Ted. You know, I am pleased with the community's response in these regards, because if we had not implemented the governor's guidelines, and if the health department hadn't been so aggressive in identifying individuals, doing isolation and quarantine, this would have been much worse, much worse. We would have had much more disease, many more hospitalizations, and many more deaths. So we have slowed down the transmission of the disease. We have slowed down the incidence of hospitalizations and deaths through these various disease mitigation strategies. And we just need to kind of hang in there for the next 6 months. We are going to go to phase three, which opens Virginia up a little bit more. But that doesn't mean let's just, you know, start hugging and kissing everybody we see. Sorry.
No, because like you say, the virus is still here. That hasn't changed.
Correct. Absolutely. It is endemic. We've not been able to box this in. Endemic meaning that it's widespread in the population. It's going to be here, and we are going to need to learn how to live and work with this virus, but the key is going to be the vaccine.
And I guess in just one of the things that we did to remember, that it is endemic, it is out there, and you take a look, we're going to phase three, but you hear about some other states where Texas and Florida come to mind, where they're having to really slow things down and in kind of get people to realize that, because the numbers are up in some of those states.
That's right. You may have heard in the news that there are several states now that are seeing a surge in disease. And exactly why, I'm a little surprised. You know, Texas is a warm state and lots of sunshine, and yet they're having this surge right now. About 3 months behind where the rest of the country has been. I have a friend in nursing who actually runs a surgical unit at a new hospital in Austin, Texas. And the way she talked about her work right now, it's where we were 3 months ago in Virginia. They're just now talking about discontinuing elective procedures in their hospital, so that staff would be available for a surge of hospital demand to minimize folks coming in the hospital that may be infected. So these are measures they're now just now putting into place in major, mostly in major cities in Texas.
Well, I guess all the complaining we did, and a lot of us who, you know, this when we really buttoned things down here, it has been for the best.
Yes, sir. Yeah, it has. And we just need to kind of ride it out for the next 6-7 months.
Dr. Donald Stern with us this morning, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. Much more coming up. We will be right back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Miss an episode of Town Talk? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Music. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Donald Stern with us this morning, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. With all of these, as we go into phase three, Dr. Stern, it makes it as far as businesses go, quite a few changes for businesses.
With phase three, it's more opening up of Virginia, and so it's providing guidance for businesses to even open up further. But this doesn't mean just back to normal. There's still encouragement. In fact, the governor's document is like 40 pages for providing infection control measures still in the workplace. So there's lots of guidance still about physical distancing, wearing of masks, providing clear communications and signage for physical distancing in the workplace, limiting occupancy of that workspace, encouraging employees to still telework if you can. Why come back to work and be around a bunch of people and still at risk for transmission of disease if you can reasonably telecommute? So there's limiting the number of gatherings in the workplace, so holding conferences by telephone, so on and so forth, training, using different types of electronic technology for training rather than doing face-to-face. So these are multiple guidelines. I encourage folks to take a look at the governor's website if you want more detail about these. They include, of course, then cleaning of surfaces and disinfection of surfaces, the extent in which people are using different tools and equipment that is shared, being careful about cleaning those, disinfecting those between uses, providing employees and customers a place to wash their hands or easy access to hand sanitizer, and developing staff schedules to implement additional short breaks so that staff can wash their hands and again, focusing more on providing the good hygiene opportunities for staff, hand washing, hand sanitizer, and more details about even how to wash your hands.
We all need to be reminded. We have, that's the one thing we really have learned through all of this, Dr. Stern, is that that's the one area that we all need to learn more about and be better proficient at washing our hands, whether it's the frequency or the length.
Sure. I mean, there's no harm done in it. You rise above it and take a look at it. It just looks a little funny. Guidance from the governor's office telling us how to wash our hands.
Yeah. Oh, it's truly.
But it's such a fundamental, valuable infectious disease control measure, and not just for COVID-19. I mean, public health folks have preached this for hundreds of years, about the value of washing hands for whether gastrointestinal illness, respiratory illnesses. It's so valuable in preventing the spread of disease. We can't overemphasize washing of hands.
Well, I was going to say, in a lot of these things that you talked about are important just to remind ourselves, especially in the workplace, as more people start coming back and as the workplace starts to fill out again, and you're maybe in a little bit closer contact with more people than you've been lately.
Correct. These guidelines go on and talk about the developing and adopting flexible sick leave policies, for those employees who are ill, not to come to work. I mean, this is one of the things that we're finding repeatedly in the workplace where we have outbreaks, is that there's evidence that employees came to work who were ill, and in some cases, the employer even allowed them, knowing that they were ill, in the workplace. That doesn't make sense. I know there's a demand, you know, in a long-term care facility to provide patient care, and you can't do that without your staff. In the manufacturing arena, there's a demand to produce a product and get it out the door, and you can't do that without your staff. In the retail market, you know, there's a demand to provide reasonable level of customer support and retail support. You can't do that without your staff. But do you want to exchange those elements of customer service for an outbreak in your facility or in your workplace? No, because then not only are those folks out because of their illness, but all their contacts then must be quarantined. So it's that much more of an impact on reduction of workforce when you have an outbreak in your place. And, you know, I had an outbreak in my office. And so there was a two-week period I had 30 staff out of the office. And it can be remarkably disruptive. So we really encourage employers to be careful about this, to follow the CDC and VDA, Virginia Department of Health guidelines, to prevent the spread of disease in the workplace. So that's, these guidelines are very practical. I think they're very reasonable, and encourage folks to follow them.
Yeah, no, it's you've talked about this consistently, about the person who might have the sniffles or a slight cough or maybe a little bit of an elevated temperature, and just it's that one person, then like you say, that can, you know, take out a whole office.
Right, and it's reasonable that not only do employees self-monitor and stay home if ill, but it's reasonable if employers want to provide for that support as employees are coming in, that they do a temperature check and symptom check as employees are coming to work each day.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District, here this morning. We have talked about schools and their reopening, and I know schools are continuing to work on plans. And anything new to report on that?
Well, the schools are, as you say, are all working on detailed plans for opening up in this next semester, and some, of course, this summer. This becomes really complex when you think about the school's role is education. So how do you deliver education in a COVID-19 environment when the virus is endemic? We know it's all around. So the challenge for schools is to try to minimize the risk of transmission of disease while they provide education support to their students. Now, the purists would say, well, the best way, the most extreme measure for us to employ to protect our children and prevent spread of disease is just tell everybody to stay home. Well, you know, is that practical? Should we still tell, not just the thing about not just schools, but businesses, everybody just stay home? And that way, that's what the purist would say. But that's not reasonable nor practical. So the guidelines are trying to provide schools some guidance on how to provide education for their students in a COVID-19 environment and minimize the risk of transmission of disease. And that's what we've been helping to advise and guide them through this process. So there's now CDC guidelines and VDH guidelines available, and we've been providing guidance and support to the schools in these regards. And they're all required to submit plans to the State Department of Education. What the State Department of Education is going to do with every school division's plans, I'm not sure. But I think it's reasonable that we work through a process of, you know, how are we going to, first of all, open up schools and know that we've developed an environment that minimizes risk of spread. So screening kids that come in the door, social distancing in the school, which means minimizing movement of students and faculty through the school, 6-foot separation of desks in the classroom, everybody wears a mask. I mean, these are the guidance that we have recommended to our schools That doesn't mean the schools have to implement them. The schools, the health department is not in a position of approving or disapproving these school plans. We are advisors to the schools. It's all upon the school divisions for what they then include in their plans. So, but these are the elements that we're recommending. Delivering a lunch in the classroom rather than having all these kids gather in a cafeteria. And so these are measures to prevent spread of disease. But what do schools do if a student or faculty is found to be symptomatic and then positive for COVID-19? We've provided a set of guidelines for how to respond to that. And most importantly is engaging parents around this so that parents understand what schools have done in order to provide a safe place for their children to come to school. And secondly, what schools are going to do when that student or that faculty or staff member turns out to have COVID-19. Are we going to react in fear and anxiety and say, oh my God, we got to close the school? No. We apply the principles of reasonable practicality, determine those individuals who may be at risk for transmission of disease, quarantine them as the individual who's positive for COVID-19 is isolated until they recover.
Well, and you have said from the start, and I think it's important probably for parents to even start talking to their kids about it if they haven't already, this year is going to be unlike any school year they've ever had.
This will be a very unusual school year. I mean, think about it, Ted. How do we get kids to school? I mean, for those who ride a bus, then what do we do if we try to keep a 6-foot social distancing on school buses? Well, if you actually get into it, you'll realize that's impossible for school divisions, particularly those in rural areas, to transport the number of kids to school, even if they stagger school schedules, say, you know, bring one group of kids in on Monday and Wednesday and another group of kids in on Tuesday and Thursday, so you're not having to bus everybody every day. Even that, it's next to impossible for schools to do it without purchasing multiple buses and hiring more drivers. And, you know, so what we looked at was, again, applying the principle of reasonable practicality, how can we minimize risk of transmission to our students and yet still be able to transport them on the school buses? So we've come up with a recommendation for a 3-foot spacing, but are asking parents and the schools to keep those children who are high risk for severe response to this disease, to COVID-19, to stay home, not even come to school for the next 6 months. So children with severe diabetes, severe asthma, underlying cardiac and pulmonary disease, kidney liver disease, the kids on chemotherapy or otherwise have an immune-compromised disease, stay home. And we're encouraging the schools to come up with strategies for continuing their education, but in the home setting, at least for the next 6 months. So you don't have those kids on the bus. The rest of the kids, otherwise healthy kids, they are instructing parents to teach their children how to wear a mask. It's not up to the schools to do that alone. Parents ought to be teaching their kids how to wear a mask and how to wash their hands and then put them on the school bus. With a 3-foot distancing, so a child in every seat but staggered, so that there's one student per seat, and children from the same household, they can all sit together. That's okay. But this is part of our recommendation so that schools can transport the volume of students that they need to school and yet provide for safety for their students. So those are some of our recommendations right now, Ted.
Dr. Donald Stern here, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. We'll take a break and be right back on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It is now 8:33.
Okay, listen, we got to talk about something.
Talk done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. You can weigh in about today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Donald Stern here, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. As we talk about schools, I guess one of the things we should talk about, Dr. Stern, is just vaccinations, the regular kind of vaccinations that students have to have. And we've been so focused on COVID-19 for all of these months. For a lot of families, they may have forgotten that they may have to have some vaccinations up to date for their kids.
Very good point, Ted. Because of COVID-19, also, many parents have delayed, you know, those well child checkups and routine visits to the pediatrician, part of which right now are to get ready for school, physical exams, and for their vaccines. Well, you know, I don't want to exchange one outbreak for another. It's very important that students get their vaccines for school attendance, and that's, you know, these are required by law for school attendance, that there be a certain set of vaccines that children must have to attend school. So we're working with all the school divisions in Planning District 16 to help them help their families be ready for school by setting up some special vaccine clinics. Now, we encourage folks, call your primary care provider and make an appointment, get your kid in, and get those vaccines before school starts. But if you don't have insurance or don't have a primary care provider, your local health department is available. Right now, we only have those clinics set up in Stafford, the Stafford Health Department, but over the next couple months, we hope to expand the availability of those clinics as we move our staff who've been working on COVID-19 back to local health department operations and replace them with contract staff who are now we can bring on board by use of federal COVID-19 funds that's coming through the state and from the CDC. So we're talking about school readiness here, not just for COVID-19, but school readiness by making sure that your children have the correct set of vaccines so they're not excluded from school once they hit the door. So we'll begin our clinics on July the 6th. That's just, a week or two away?
Yeah.
Information about this is available on our website. We'll be providing not only the back-to-school vaccines, but infant vaccines. Right now, I believe we're setting those up by appointment, so folks need to call, not just walk in to the health department if they want those vaccines. Those back-to-school vaccines include the Tdap booster, tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis. The P is the important element here. If you remember some years ago, pertussis outbreaks or whooping cough outbreaks, that's the reason why we now provide a booster vaccine at the seventh grade level or entering seventh grade. Haemophilus influenza B vaccine, hepatitis B, HPV, measles, mumps, and rubella, pneumococcal vaccine, polio, and chickenpox. These are vaccines that are available and necessary for school attendance. So encourage folks to make an appointment with a primary care provider, and if you can't do that, call the health department. Get your vaccines for your children so that they can attend school and not be excluded.
When we have talked about the health department and just the charge that you have of all that you do, and COVID-19 has just overwhelmed you. But again, another illustration that you continue to do the things that you know, the day-to-day things that have to be done. And again, kudos to your staff for continuing to provide all of this.
Well, yes, thank you very much. I congratulate my staff because they are prospective in their work and in the way of thinking, because they're the ones that are saying, well, we really need to get ready for school next year. And the schools, of course, are saying the same thing. And so we're always trying to stay ahead of the game, anticipating the need for these vaccines this coming school year. You know, we've already talked about the flu campaign that will be coming up for sure. We'll be doing a flu campaign, vaccine campaign. And then my favorite, of course, is COVID-19 vaccine campaign.
Yeah, we're going to get into that. When we were talking about this earlier, I was thinking of every year we always do a couple of shows usually on just flu shots we will be doing many shows on the need for the vaccine when that comes out.
Well, look forward to that, Ted. That'll be a month or two down the road, huh?
Yeah, no, but I know I think we all are looking forward to that. Besides the school vaccinations, I know the health department now was a week ago today that you did the first of yet community testing in Caroline County. You're continuing to do that now around the district.
Yes, sir. We did begin providing what we call community testing for COVID-19 a week ago in Caroline County, that with two churches involved in bringing folks together in that community. We did 173 tests in one day, and they all came back negative. How about that?
Wow.
We were at the food bank yesterday. I do not have a count right now, but I know that we were prepared to do several hundred yesterday. Again, the National Guard helped us with this exercise, with this test, and we should have those results soon. But coming up, we also plan to provide for community testing in at the Bragg Hill Family Life Center. Let's see, that'll be Tuesday, June the 30th. This is in partnership, of course, with the Bragg Hill Family Life Center and the City of Fredericksburg. The City Police Department will help, and the National Guard. This will, I think, will be actually the last time we'll be able to use the National Guard. And these guys are wonderful. They know their work. They are very efficient about this, as I said, with military precision. They provide these testings in a very customer-friendly manner, and this should go well. So we're encouraging community members to come out and get tested for COVID-19 on this day. We know that many people with COVID-19 may only show mild symptoms or may not show symptoms at all. So you don't have to be symptomatic to come get the test. You may have the disease and not know it and test positive. So we encourage folks, even if they don't feel sick, they can feel free to come and get a COVID-19 test. The challenge is, of course, that many individuals can still spread the disease to others, some of whom may be at risk for severe illness. So think about it. If you've got a disease you don't even know you have, you could be transmitting it to other people and make those people ill, and you know, could be severe illness, especially for the elderly and those with underlying medical conditions. So come get the test at Bragg Hill, June the 30th. We should be there. I believe the National Guard likes to start in the morning, and so we'll be there certainly in the morning. This testing is at no cost to those who get tested. This is covered under our COVID-19 funding, and the National Guard is, of course, covered under state resources. So this is no charge for those. And by the way, it's for individuals age 16 and older.
Okay. if I go through that test, if I go through the test, I feel fine, but I come positive. Do you then quarantine me for 14 days?
No, if you're positive, then you get isolated, not quarantine. Isolation is a little bit more restrictive than a quarantine.
Okay.
So folks with disease get isolation, and we'll be giving guidance to them about how to do that, to avoid contact with other humans or possible spread of the disease. Folks who are contacts with individuals who are known to have disease are then quarantined. So these are the contacts, and quarantine is a little less restrictive. But in a similar way, the quarantine is for 14 days. Isolation is based on the symptoms. If somebody has symptoms, then we remove them from isolation. After the symptoms reduce and there's no temperature for 3 days, if they never acquire symptoms, that's monitored for 10 days and then 3 days absent fever. So it's still about 10 to 14 days a person would be in isolation.
Okay. Yeah, no, these community tests, this is a great opportunity to find out, you know, like you say, you don't want to be the person that's the carrier and can just provide havoc in your family and just in your circle of people that are people that you're in contact with.
Right. So Ted, I should note that our press release in these regards does note that this is a drive-through event. However, I will be questioning my staff about what about those folks that don't have a car? Are they then supposed to find somebody who has a car that can drive through? Excuse me.
Yeah.
So we may need to adjust that setting so that folks can still get tested who don't have a car. I've got to raise that question. it is a nasal swab test, so there will be a small cotton swab inserted into the nose to obtain an adequate sample. But that only takes a second or two. People would describe it as being uncomfortable and unusual, but not painful.
That's just what I've heard.
So, yeah.
We can do this. And like you say, again, to go back there, hang in there for the next 6 months. That's kind of our theme today, that there's a vaccine is coming.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District here. We will conclude when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Opinions, we've all got them. And we'd like to hear yours on Town Talk. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Donald Stern with us, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. So, Dr. Stern, I got a question for you. This question is a little bit personal, but if you're planning on going on vacation in a place where you're going is considered a hot spot, what do you recommend? Is this maybe the year you don't go there, or are you you just take greater precautions?
Well, I suggest that folks apply the principle of reasonable practicality. You want to minimize your risk for disease, don't you?
Yep.
You don't want to have this disease. I'll tell you what, you don't want to have this disease, especially if you're elderly or have some underlying medical conditions, because you could have a severe form of this disease and end up in the hospital. And that could be very unpleasant. I think it's fine that people take vacation. You want to maybe choose a site that's not such a hot spot, and you can get online and you can find out where those hot spots still are in the country. And I would just avoid large groups of people who don't wear their masks. Going to the beach is fine, but when the beach becomes very crowded and people don't have their mask, well, you know, do you really need to have a mask on when you're outside? It's less risky being outside without a mask, but indoor events, if you're indoor, there's a higher risk of transmission indoor and close proximity. So wear the mask, social distance 6 feet or greater between people, minimize attendance of group events, and wash your hands frequently. Carry your hand sanitizer in your pocket or your swim trunks or whatever. That's easy to do, a small bottle of hand sanitizer. These strategies work, especially when combined together, to prevent the spread of disease. And you don't want to give that, you don't want to get acquired disease yourself. You don't want to transmit that disease to others. Again, so much of this disease is asymptomatic in nature. You don't know whether you may be infected or not and could be transmitting that disease to others. And that's why we still encourage people to wear a mask. Do this for the next 6 months. Just do it. Don't worry about it. Don't be so selfish and anxious. Oh, it's too hot. Oh, I can't breathe. Oh, I'm claustrophobic. Put on the mask and protect others in the workplace, at school, and when you're in a group setting in the grocery store, et cetera.
And I think, Stephen, too, when you're if you're sitting now in a restaurant, and you don't have a mask, obviously, when you're eating, but when you're not eating and when you're waiting and you're all just sitting around talking, I've seen situations of that and have thought, while you're waiting for your food or after you're done, put that mask on and don't linger. Don't linger, especially inside.
You're correct, Ted. And some, you know, I've seen restaurants do it well, just absolutely perfectly, and others where there's little regard for disease transmission. So you may want to select your restaurant based on that as well as quality of food. There are some restaurants that do it very well. I understand, for example, Hanover Tavern does it very well, and I'm sure there are many others that do it exceptionally well. So, take a mask. Why not? No, you can't eat with a mask on, but like you say, wearing a mask when you walk in, while you're waiting, is a reasonable practice.
And just the fact of just being inside, once you're done, move on, just because so you can, you just put yourself at greater risk the longer you stay, it seems.
So you want to talk about our hope to revive the community?
We've only got about 30 seconds, if you can do it really quick.
Okay, let's revive our community. Ride this out. Just 6 more months, folks. We're asking folks to be careful with their infection control practices and behavior for the next 6 months. It is endemic. It's with us. The vaccine is going to be available. We'll have an immunization campaign. We're going to vaccinate those who are most vulnerable, and medical providers and first responders, and everyone can participate. We're all in this together.
Wow, I've trained you well. That was well done. Dr. Donald Stern, the Acting Director, Rappahannock Area Health District. Dr. Stern, always great to talk to you. Look forward to speaking to you again. Stay safe, my friend.
Thank you very much, Ted. Have a great day.
That's it for Town Talk. Thank you for listening. We'll see you Monday morning, News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own, and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
I'm Bob Sizemore, retired pastor of Fairview Baptist Church, and I'd like for you to put aside the problems of the day and think about God for a moment. We need to pray for our country as we face a deadly virus and an even more deadly temptation to